Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, July 19th, 1999. In the fireside room this evening is Pete Goddard. Today's session number is 99-3 and is titled Our Spiritual and Historical Family Heritage and How This Influences Us Today. Let's listen in.
My name is Pete Goddard, and tonight's session, what is tonight's session? On our spiritual, historical, and family heritage, and how this influences us today. I'm going to bore some of you that have been to my workshops. I'm a social worker from Seattle, although the last 20 years I was in North Carolina. I'm recovering North Carolinian. Being in Seattle now, I work primarily with teenagers, kids, and families as a therapist, either when the kids are driving the parents crazy or the parents are driving the kids crazy, either, you know, when they kind of come and see me. I also, to keep myself sane, work and repair wooden boats, which is real fun to do. And the best part is I don't own a boat. That's the best part of it. You know, so it's like if the Center for Wooden Boats in Seattle is great. You can go there and tinker around if you want to. If you want to sail, you can sail. So it's great fun. Let's see. Tonight, this is not the kind of session where you all can just sit there and look like, what is he saying kind of stuff. You will be involved to some degree trying to get you going, that kind of stuff, instead of just sitting around. The reason being is that I don't have many answers, and the stuff that we're dealing with, I probably even have fewer answers than people expect. Lots of times, parents bring, especially their teenagers, you know, they're like, you know, they're Pete, deal with them, you know, do something with them, and I'm like, what, you know, it's like, you know, what do you want? And it's, I don't have the answers to a lot of the questions that people have. But what I try to do is, by in developing a relationship with the teenager and with the parents, is be able to figure out what's going on and how you can do things differently. So, since I don't have many of the answers, but I think that in this room we have a lot of answers. And so if you're expecting, you know, words of wisdom from me, forget it, but words of wisdom from this group, yes. And so that's why I'm going to try and develop us as a group and being able to get some ideas and some thought processes going. Then some learning can really take place. Okay? That make sense? Good enough. All right. How many of you, this is your first time up here? Okay. All right. Well, welcome. Glad that you're here. It's the thing that always strikes me when I come up here is when I'm walking around, or the size of these trees sometimes. You know, you look around, and, you know, I love the theme, you know, for this summer, you know, Tree of Life. And you're like, oh, gosh. And on the hike, like, going up to Holden, I mean, like, you get these whiffs of pine. You're like, oh, my gosh. You know, it's, like, incredible. You just, you want to breathe that in and just, you know, hold it there forever. And so it's like, this Tree of Life, then, when we're thinking about families, I drew this. This is the only kind of tree I can draw, I admit. I'm sorry, but I'm not good at drawing, and I think I did fairly well with that Christmas tree up there. And since there's so many Christmas trees around here, and all these other trees, I was looking out on the board and have all these examples of trees out there, and they're all these, like, you know, stick kind of things and everything. I can't do that. Plus, this gives me more room to write stuff and all, so I like that. But we're not, ignore this part. Okay? We're not going to be talking about that. Lots of people have been talking about, you know, the fruits of the tree and all this kind of stuff. We're not going to get to that today. Tomorrow. Okay? We'll get to more of that stuff and later on this week. We're going to be dealing with the most important part of the tree, the roots. Okay? That's why I left all the space up here. These trees out here, you know, you look at how incredibly tall they are. And, let's see, going up to the mine and all, they had that one, like, slice of a tree. It's like an 800-year-old tree. Okay, what was going on 800 years ago? Come on. Before Christopher Columbus, what year was it?
1200.
Around 1200.
The Crusades
were going on.
All right.
The Leaning Tower of Pisa. Okay. Hey. You made that up.
I didn't.
All right.
Sounds good.
You know, it's like, and you think, okay, well, what was going on in this part of the world in the, you know, around 1200? And for, you know, a tiny little sapling to be starting off, and what it takes as far as a root system and getting that going, what kind of a foundation, what kind of an influence did that tree have that allowed it to grow for 800 years? And then someone cut it down? No, who cut that tree down? It's like preserving all these trees sometimes. So we're gonna look at some of the background or some of the roots that are feeding this tree of life, or a family tree, if you kind of think of it. In your own family trees, you may think of just like all the branches, and you're like, okay, who's related to who, and all this kind of stuff. But we're gonna be looking at a family tree and the roots of the family tree. Okay? Make sense so far? All right. So, and being able to do that, let's see. All right, we're gonna look at where one of the roots of families in this country. Okay, primarily. So we're going to look at, you ever notice that whenever someone gets a magic marker that doesn't work, what do they do with it?
Put it back.
Where's the garbage can? It's like, you know, it's like.
You have to recycle.
No, this is. You've done garbage. This is landfill material, I think. I can't burn it. It's like, you know. All right. So, let's see. All right, societal roots. Now, also, I don't write real well, and I spell worse, and so...
Not dark enough for...
It's not dark enough.
Yeah, like a black girl.
Okay, thank you for saying that. How's that?
That's too dark.
Who said that? I'm just curious. You have a problem, child. You're having a hard time.
Still am.
Yes. Okay. I learned the word obstinate at a very young age. In fact, Jim that just walked out, his oldest son, Joel, said something to me about being stubborn. It's like when kids identify you as being stubborn. Yeah, watch out. All right, some of the societal roots then. What are some of the influences on families in our culture today from society? What influences have we got going on?
Mass communication.
What?
Mass communication.
Okay.
Media.
Media,
what about peer groups?
That's currently the peer groups, I think.
Yeah.
Let's think, you know, what is in the past, what has influenced us?
Church.
The church. We're going to get to that. That's another one we're going to come to. Oh. But hang on to it. Okay?
You want to go back further?
Yeah. As a society.
The integration.
Okay. Like what?
Like the British.
that our roots here are from a lot of us only go back a certain distance here, and the heritage is from other places.
Okay.
And the traditions of that.
Well, if we look at as a country, what kind of societal influences started this country?
Economics and desire for freedom,
and
freedom.
What kind of
freedoms? Life, liberty, political, religious. Political and religious freedom.
All right, political and religious freedom.
Speech.
Okay, and speech also, you said?
Yeah.
All right. What else? What kind of got us going as a country?
The economics, the wanting to own your own land and leave the country where you were peasants.
Independence.
Okay, and okay. And what was emphasized, do you remember?
Do we remember?
Self-reliance.
Self-reliance.
Yeah.
If you work hard enough, the American dream, if you work hard enough, you can make a good life for yourself in this country.
Yeah, emphasis on the self. Yeah. Okay. All right. What else?
This one over here mentioned financial opportunity, and you didn't put it down.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
A lot of people came because of free land or the opportunity to buy land cheaply.
Okay.
And many different cultures from Spain, from England, from
Norway.
Okay. So whereas back over in Europe, it might be more segregated at times somewhat? Okay.
Homogeneous.
More. Okay. And what kind of an influence as being a melting pot has that had on us then?
Vast diversity within the...
Say again?
Vast diversity within the culture.
Okay.
As well as these traditions that are brought from these various nations.
Okay.
Potential for tolerance.
Potential for tolerance, okay. All right. Something else about, we were just saying though before, the potential for tolerance. I lost that. Okay.
It's diversity.
The diversity.
The diversity, yeah. Yeah, thank you. All right. Anything else as far as society goes that has kind of had an influence on this tree that we're talking about here?
Okay. Loyalty to family, loyalty to your ethnic background, loyalty to the ideals of freedom for all.
Okay, loyalty to your family, what else? Ideals?
How about the Puritan ethic?
Okay. Puritan ethic, which was?
Hard work.
And what happens? If you work hard, what's going to happen?
Success.
You'll be successful. Okay.
The shift from an agricultural country to an increasingly urbanized country, I don't know. More sociological than it is societal, I guess. It has an effect on society.
Okay.
A piece of that, though, ahead of that, it seems to me, is this was an agrarian society at a point.
Mm-hmm.
The need for labor, which came from family, coupled with I'm trying to talk about birth control. No good birth control method. So you had large families who served purpose. They were working on the farms.
So where did the labor force come from?
It came from the
family.
Your family.
As an example, my dad grew up during the Depression. He didn't leave home until he was 23.
Uh-huh.
Because all of the family were there working the family farm until they couldn't make a living. Then they left the farm. But they had a large family because, in large part, I think, because they needed the help, but also they didn't know how to control
the population,
or maybe didn't want to control birth.
Okay.
So there's an expectation you have large families.
All right. Okay.
I think in the beginning, too, there was an expectation coming to this country that everyone would learn English. We had that common language.
I don't think that was initially so, though.
Maybe you shouldn't generalize, but the immigrant families that I've been around, there was definitely a pride in learning the local language.
Okay.
We were going to be Americans.
All right. Yeah.
I just thought if they're self-supporting, they didn't look to someone else to help them.
All right, hang on to that for a second. Yeah, we'll get to that. So.
It was more a necessity, though.
To learn the language.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I experienced that same thing. I mean, you know, my family said too, there was sort of a break with the tradition of the old country and being new. And so some of the old traditions were not carried on because they wanted to be American.
Mm-hmm. I think that happened with the generation following, you know, yeah. more so than the first generation. I see that in the people in our community. They're Vietnamese, Chinese, they come over and the old people retain the language and the Mexican culture too.
All right, so some loss of culture and some retention of it, depending upon which generation we're talking about. Okay. All right. Now, I'm saying, was that Jimmy one?
Well, I was just going to make a comment about the self-sufficiency argument, and I think certainly that's very true in the North. Further south, of course, you've got the slave states, and they weren't self-sufficient at all. You know, major plantations, they were really major work by folks who were slaves. And there's a certain kind of cultural superiority that enabled people to justify the practice of slavery, which I see as a societal root.
Yeah. Okay. So, starting off very much of we're better than you, I'm not as better as them, kind of stuff?
Well, at least that's how I would perceive it. I mean, I've never been in that situation, but it seems to me be hard to not, either you've been raised in a tradition, either a religious environment or a social environment that tells you these other people are not human beings, or you need something that justifies your enslavement of them, and that what that would be is your cultural superiority. And it's probably the case those two things are together.
That also has to go with Native Americans, you know, the way
that
it's not
me,
just
right.
Slavery.
Yeah.
Now, so we can ping along.
Yeah. Okay. And you want to miss?
I didn't have anything more to add other than being self-supporting. You expect us to do things for yourself, whether it's for some government agency or so.
Okay. All right.
I don't think it matters whether the means justify the ends. I think in some cases, slavery and taking over Native American lands, we just thought we need the land, so you'll have to move.
But that must have said something about us as, I mean, if we look at another person, you know, it had to say something about the people that came, you know, in our families.
You're talking about the church influences or church type of roots.
See, they put a permanent marker down at the bottom there on the rack on the left there. I don't know if we'll show it better than that.
I tell you. Okay. The church or spiritual roots. Again, influences.
Don't write on that board with that marker.
Sorry. I was also oppositional as a kid, too.
Gotcha.
It says, easy erase. No, just. All right. Other kind of. The church spiritual influences. Now, you can kind of lump together. You know, church, how far back do you want to go? Influences, Lutheran church, spiritual type of influences that we've had. What do you see as kind of influencing this current now, this tree of our family trees these days?
asking is two questions. We started out with our spiritual roots being very black and white. We thought God was up here, you were down here, you did good, you went up there. It was kind of a simplistic, puritanical model.
Okay.
And now we're to a very confused and blurred model of spiritual roots.
So it used to be clear cut, right?
More clear cut.
All right.
But it also used to be very restrictive.
Mm-hmm. Ah. Restrictive? What else?
It used to be tied to your immigrant status. I mean, you know, all the Scandinavians came, the Germans came, and they had their own churches. And each wave of immigrants to the U.S. felt superior to the next wave that came in. And we have our church all tied up with that culture.
So a feeling of superiority to others?
Well, I think a feeling of exclusivity.
Okay.
Related to where you came from in the old country. People trying to hold on to the old cultures. So now we want to be inclusive and we say, how do we do that?
Okay, so different religious exclusivity. Kind of being, yeah, set up off of it. Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of times the church would serve as an extended family, especially in smaller communities. It could be 100 moms and 100 dads.
Okay.
And the church helped form schools and hospitals and many good foundations for society.
Schools, hospitals, what else?
Orphanages.
Huh?
Orphanages,
yeah.
Social service orientation.
Nursing homes.
Nursing homes, all right.
Safety net, basically, for a lot of the government services that didn't exist, especially in the beginning.
I don't know if this would go with the extended family, but a lot of the churches would provide the social entertainment.
Besides setting up for social activities, What other kind of role did the church have as far as family?
Well, some churches reinforce patriarchy as the appropriate model for social relations with the family.
So the rules of the family structure was a lot of times dictated by the church? Who you could and could not marry? You know, who could and could not participate in worship?
Rituals for life passages, births and deaths.
Okay. All right. Which do you see is the more of the influence, the church side or spiritual side?
Church.
Any idea as to why?
Well, we could use the church for a lot of different purposes. It could be used for, a lot of those things. It could be used politically. It could be used as justification for, you know, the southern churches were justified by their interpretation of the biblical scripture for slavery.
Yeah.
And the North used it to dispute slavery.
They were more useful than individual spirituality. They were more pragmatically and widely useful.
Mm-hmm. Say some more.
Well, you know, one person getting into a state of ecstasy every day over their relationship with God didn't really change the world. It changed the person. But churches, as a structure in the early society of our country, changed a wide variety of structures and was, in fact, a moral gatekeeper for many years.
They outnumbered the Kiwanis, the Rotarians, the Elks Club, all
those
semi-political groups early on.
Ah, okay.
Weren't they the earliest political group?
Hey, were they?
Sure.
What other organization was there?
Okay. So it was very much the center of the family life, or, okay. And we're gonna look at where we are now, okay, and later on, but right now we're kind of getting some of the groundwork going for as far as like, you know, how do we get to the place that we are now? All right, anything else on this? You all had dinner and you're all settling your stomach and it's like, now you're just like, okay. All right, let's see, next one. More currently, I want you to look at what kind of family influences have on this family tree of life. Now, we're going to do a lot more recent stuff now, as far as like, you know, here we're kind of going back a ways. But if you think, and this may be in your own family, or it may be in other families that you know, what kind of family influences are there that's affecting this tree today?
Changing the role of primary caregivers. I can explain that if you want me to. Part of that's related to the changing role of the female in our society. Whereas one era in our society, the woman was the primary caregiver that produced certain outcomes with family and influences on family. Those roles have changed.
Okay.
And sometimes the primary caregiving is outside the home.
Okay.
Education.
All right, what else?
The divorce vehicle.
Say again now?
Divorce.
Right.
I know, along with that, single parent families, not necessarily that have ever been divorced or married or whatever, but there's...
What else?
Two income families.
Okay.
Extended work days.
Is that extended what?
The working day is extended.
Parents who let children raise themselves.
Latchkey kids?
No.
All right, I'll put that up, but let me get yours then.
Parents who let children raise themselves.
All right, give us an example of that. I'll put it up here.
They get them through perhaps the toddler years into kindergarten, and pretty much then let them decide what they want to do, when they want to go to bed, what they want to eat, who their friends are, when they're coming home at night. It's not latchkey.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay.
The daycare availability for families with these various daycare options, I think, have great influence on families today to varying degrees.
The increase in activity out there, you know, it used to be home is where you kind of, you know, you kind of all gather around the table, but, you know, you've got soccer or cheerleading or basketball or whatever. I mean, there's so many more things outside.
income.
What about income?
As I see it, the divisiveness of wealth and very wealthy families and then the poverty part for some.
Bigger spread between the haves and the haves not, have nots, you're saying?
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, tied to that, you might also have spending patterns, because you may find within a family three generations where there are very different preferences for spending, or very different spending patterns.
Can I go back to the class when you wrote down
sure.
that difference? And maybe this was intended, but and I'm using a lifelong experience as an educator to say this. There are kids up here that are influenced by deprivation quite differently than kids who are deprived at this level.
Yes.
These kids may get psychologically disadvantaged because their parents are chasing the dollar. These kids are disadvantaged because their parents don't have the dollar.
And so the ones down here may be getting that psychological attention or what
yes.
they need, whereas the ones up here.
That's right. And this kid may be better off in terms of a holistic life than this one.
That's what we're going to be looking at when we get into. How is this stuff then affecting families today? Because I think that's, you know, it's like, this is kind of like laying some of the foundation work as far as in looking at how's that going on? How do we get to that point now where, and how, you know, what is it that's down here that's influencing us to go in that direction? Where's the shift in our priorities been? What does it seem like is a priority these days within families?
Just carrying it forward, a child in poverty can have unconditional love from their parents and expectations laid on them, even though they're poor.
Yes.
And they may be more psychologically sound to be successful than a kid who has everything he ever wanted but is psychologically deprived by his parents. I may be overstating the case, but I'm just thinking it's a critical point.
So changing values somewhat?
Yeah. Changing model of family. The notion of the nuclear family is fairly recent. And as we become more mobile as a society, the ability for extended members of the family, grandparents, cousins, uncles, aunts to help in the care of children has been reduced. And so there's been a lot more pressure on the mother and father to do that. There's also been, since the early 70s, a decline in real wages for men. And that in family income was replaced by women then joining the workforce in greater numbers and in greater hours. And then, of course, that was paired with the 60s and liberation for women, or at least what they perceived to be that, and the opportunity to be treated equally and to work. And you got all those things working together.
Okay. All right.
The loss of mealtime being a family time. 75 to 90% of my kids never sit down at a table with the whole family for a meal in my school. And I'm teaching a very strong church family oriented area.
Mm-hmm.
And still, because of everybody having so many activities, there's not a family meal where the whole family is there. Everybody goes there at a different time in the morning, everybody comes home at a different time at night,
yeah.
So that there's no time together as a family.
Okay.
And if there is time, they usually are watching TV together. That's our one central family activity now.
Yeah.
It fits into, I guess, the changing role models where what are the kids' heroes? How they end up doing it.
Now, and you said changing role models of kids. What about of us adults?
Well, yeah, we're influenced.
What are our role models?
Well,
today. What is it adults aspire to be like? Like whom? What?
Bill Gates.
Bill Gates. Yeah, okay. Of course, the youth and adults. Whereas, well, because, you know, and one of the other sessions last week, we're looking at, you know, role models like, you know, like 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Who were your role models then?
Elvis Presley.
Parents, grandparents? What national figures?
Jackie Robinson, Pee Wee's, baseball.
Gene Autry, Roy Rogers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the athletes, politicians. Used to be.
But it wasn't because they made a lot of money.
Ah, all right, so that's where the change in who we admire, you know, interesting change. And we wonder why, you know, our kids are sometimes so caught up in bigger and more and better and faster. You know, how much are we caught up with that? You know, it's like how many, you know, you think for yourself when you buy another car or you move or you get a stereo, whatever kind of stuff, how many times you think about getting something less than what you have now, mm-hmm. or something smaller or not as powerful? Okay. I don't tend to think that way automatically, you know? Now, sometimes it takes a friend, you know, to kind of knock me in and says, what do you need that for? That kind of stuff. I don't. All right. What else for the family?
You talked about single parents and divorced parents, but you didn't talk about other non-traditional family structures. One being grandparents who now are being forced to raise children, and also gay lesbian families.
And also multicultural families.
One pastor who's here, his wife attends to an 88-year-old mother and an 18-month-old baby. So there's attention to both generations.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I have one other that fits somewhere.
Sure.
Because I've experienced it personally. I grew up in the 40s and 50s. And the only organized activity for kids in town outside the church at home was Little League baseball. And that started when I was 11. By the time my children came along, we had organized football, basketball, baseball, soccer, hockey, all starting at age 5. That by the time they were 12 years old, which is when I started Little League baseball, they had experienced it all. So those are influencers on our kids. They don't have free play, they have controlled play, and they have it year round, and they have a big dose of it from age 5 to whenever they quit.
Because of competition.
That's a very interesting comment I just have to share with you, because we're living in Norway today and raising our children in Norway, and yes, the children have sports there also, but they aren't allowed to keep score until age 12. They do it. I mean, the children do that.
Here, we pick all-stars at starting day. We pick all-stars in T-ball and go into the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, that's how competitive it gets here.
It isn't allowed.
That has to have an influence on kids.
Well, yeah, and we'll look at then, you know, how is that shaping families then today? Yeah.
He alluded to something else, that the children have experienced so much by age 12. You could almost say the children are jaded. I just finished reading a book by the parenting columnist for the Boston Globe, and she talked about how many murders children were exposed to on screen, primarily on television, by the time they were 18, and the figure was phenomenal. It was something like 30,000.
I've got that information in here about the influence of media, if you're interested in a copy of that later on. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The loss of innocence.
Yeah, and desensitization. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That because they've seen it, it has no impact.
Basically, a kindergartner going to school to kindergarten
has taken in more hours of TV than they will of any instruction in college for 4 years of college. So, what kind of influence, you know, we're talking about then, you know, the influence that media has.
It's sort of a cultural attention deficit disorder, in that we're always changing everything, but we can't stay focused on one thing more than 5 minutes.
15 between commercials. Yeah, so this expectation of being fed all the time.
Entertained all the time.
Yeah.
And not
constant change.
And you don't have to focus, you don't have to listen.
Participate.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else?
I think that entertainment matter is very important, because I think the goal, our founding fathers and mothers talk about pursuit of happiness, but our definition of happiness today, I think, is fun. It's got to be fun, it's got to be entertaining, it's got to please me.
Well, remember, this is the stuff we're going to be getting into tomorrow. What our background is here, is the self. And so if that's kind of what, you know, is the driving force that's behind so much of what's going on, no wonder we are where we are now. You know, be happy. You know, I want to be happy. Well, does that come then before the common good or of this community here at Holden? My happiness come before that? Some of the influence is saying, yeah.
Well, and before, as you mentioned, that we'd gone from an agrarian society forward, if you were having all those babies because you didn't know about birth control, you had all the sons, and you had to manage them out in the field and all, you were probably too darn tired by the time night got around to worry about if you were happy or not, or if you were going to watch 30 hours of TV or 5, even if TV had been available. But now we've accessed all this extra time and we're not handling it well.
Yeah. The question, as you were suggesting, is who defines what is happiness? And this is where perhaps the church has lost some of its power in our society. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be happy from a Christian theological perspective? That, you know, model Jesus laying down his life for others, or sharing at least, whereas you have an economic system that says the pursuit of self-interest leads miraculously through the invisible hand to raise the welfare of all, so that by pursuing our individual happiness, all of us wind up being better off because the economy grows, the seller and the producer, or the producer and the consumer meet, and everybody's happy, and that's a big change. That's a big change.
I want to see if we've kind of caught whether or not where kids fit in, as far as how we do or do not value children.
A lot of them are expected to be adult by the time they're in fifth or sixth grade because they're having to go home after school and take care of siblings, possibly get dinner ready. So.
Yeah, that's actually, as I'm thinking, as you're saying, that's kind of like where we are now. How did we get there? What brought us to this point?
Because nobody's home. Both parents are working. Or
okay. So what does that say about are how we do or do not see children?
Because the influence is more important to us.
Mm-hmm. Ah. We had to make a law to fence in swimming pools in Phoenix so that kids don't drown. Now, to me that seems mind-boggling that we have to make a law to do that, that we aren't watching our children, or they're not fenced in without making
You know, the neighborhood where I'm in Seattle, it's called Transitional Neighborhood. You all familiar with that? You know, it's like, you know, it used to be run down, but it's coming up now somewhat. But a lot of the kids in the neighborhood, I'm amazed at the 9 and 10 year olds, 11 o'clock at night on a school night. Mm-hmm.
that are outside playing football on the street. And I'm like, you know, they're like, Pete, come on, let's play football. I was like, I'm going to bed. What are you guys doing? You should go home, go to bed. And it's like, you know, there's, I take some of the kids sometimes, I take them sailing, you know, to get them out of the neighborhood somewhat. And, you know, to experience that there's other things you can do and how they can volunteer and help things, help people out at times. And when, you know, I've offered this to them at times, I say, well, first I have to talk to one of your parents. First words out of their mouth are, oh, they don't care. And when I go and talk to them, their attitude is like, oh yeah, okay, go ahead. No question about who am I? What time am I leaving? When am I bringing them back? Where is it I'm taking them?
Do you know how to sail?
Yeah.
Can you swim?
Can you swim? You see, I mean, see all this kind of, you know, it's like, all right, so somewhere along the line, this started coming in, and where'd that come from?
I think that I'm speaking as a non-parent, okay? But I think some people have children because they can't think of anything else to do. You know? And they see their children as pets and hobbies. And, you know, not every child is born out of forethought. And I think parents reflect that a lot of the time. And we'd like to think every child is valued and loved and cherished from before conception on. But it's not true.
Yeah, kids are here to meet the parents' needs.
Right. And they're to fulfill, like I'm thinking of nephews and nieces, they're to fulfill the dreams that weren't met by their parents, to be the athlete, to be the student, to be the excellent everything. And they're in basketball and soccer from 3 to 5 years of age on, and they go to AAU camps and everything to develop the skills that their own father or mother didn't develop. And then they don't attain that dream, and then there's this deflation, even though by then they kind of like the kid, you know.
They kind of like the kid. And what really scares me is the parent, especially teenage parents, you know, when I ask them, you know, why they, you know, have this child, or whatever, and I say, I want someone to love me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, that's not going to happen a whole lot, you know. So, all right. Anything else? We're kind of just about out of time for today. Any other last-minute thoughts on this?
Well, those examples that you gave of the kids on your street are the examples for the item that I said about kids, parents needing kids to raise themselves. Those are your examples.
Yeah,
that's what it is. And then you want us to zero in a little bit on how this happened. I think. How did we get
okay.
there? Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm at least partially aware that. I'm aware that at least partially, one of the reasons would be during those years when our culture was changing dramatically, and the sexual revolution was changing, and parents were in open marriages, and the hippie generation was occurring. It was a matter of satisfying myself and only finding what I wanted for myself, my own happiness, rather than caring a lot about other people. And I think that those parents then didn't know how to parent their kids, and their kids consequently didn't learn how to be parents themselves. Those kids are now in the adult years.
They're now parents, yeah.
Yeah, and they didn't have a model back there of the kind of parenting that we had historically in our nation with extended families and society paying attention to what was going on with kids and so forth.
Okay.
So I surely do see it have evolved that way.
All right. My premise for tomorrow is that as a society, we do not value children. They're dispendable, expendable, disposable, don't have enough, make some more. We don't value children. Now, I want to hear contrary views tomorrow, and also, maybe we can look at, maybe there are some areas that we do value children, but also areas that we do not.
And where are we heading with these kind of roots? What kind of tree do we have today? And what's going on? Look, you got to say something.
I don't think we value older people either. I mean,
yes.
That's another group that we, you know, we just let do on their own.
Yes.
Go to nursing homes or
it's true.
Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're not really going to be getting to that. That's not my area of expertise. But it, you're right.
This thing is connected, though. I think it's connected. Ah. We only value people that are really productive.
Self-sufficient.
That are, and making money and,
ah.
and making these.
See, you're only starting tomorrow's session.
Yeah.
All right. So hang on to that because that's where we're going to be taking off then on tomorrow and looking at what's going on. And we're looking at, you know, where are we with children today? What is it we're actually doing to them? And some of it is not good at all. And some of it is really kind of neat, too. Okay? So, see if we can't balance that out. All right, thank you very much for your attention tonight. And hope you have a good evening tonight.
Who are Ladybug Shoes?